The ABC's Word Wizard. The Lord of Language. A word in your ear with Professor Rolly Sussex.
It's usually more than one word, Rolly.
I try to limit myself.
Oh, where are you? Here we are. There you are. Yeah, you are. You don't limit yourself.
I don't?
No. No.
It's called logorrhea.
Really?
Logorrhea. The logos bit is words and the rhea bit is like diarrhea, I'm afraid. So logorrhea is uncontrollable floods of language.
Oh, well, no, it's not that.
It's close.
You give us our fair share, really, and the callers are already coming in, but you've had some actual written mail.
I have.
It wasn't even an email.
Written mail is a bit special.
I know.
So John in Mareeba has sent us a list of 54 different sayings. Now, some of them are very, very familiar. One or two was less familiar to me. But some of them, like as heavy as lead, are very old, but heavy, this is an echo phrase with the same vowel in the same words, in the parallel words, and a sober as a judge, some like those, but there are others.
Less relevant now sometimes.
Yes. I've gone digging in all sorts of things, phrases that are uttered as pieces, all right? And there are lots and lots of those. Some of them were proverbs. Well, because if you think, a couple of generations ago, our grandparents used to know lots of things by heart. Nursery rhymes. The girls had skipping rhymes.
They still do.
They still do, but not as much. Okay, and there were lots and for example, my father knew scads of the Bible by heart. And occasionally people would come to the door trying to convert him and they'd start with Isaiah and he'd do the next 40 verses and they'd go away.
Gosh, I wish I knew that trick.
Oh, he knew a phenomenal amount of things by heart. We don't train our brains like that anymore. The younger generation knows lots and lots of stuff, but it's different stuff. And they don't know great chunks of language, which they've learnt as pieces.
I'm still learning things by heart, though?
Not so much. I don't think so.
Maybe not.
Anyway, thanks to John and Mareeba, we're going to talk about various sorts of fixed versions of language like that, similes and some catchphrases. Now, a catchphrase is something that, for example, like Don Chip, the politician, keep the bastards honest. And that was one which somehow hit the right tone. You know,
Malcolm Fraser, life wasn't meant to be easy.
Thank you. That's another one. And so a catchphrase is a collection of words which for some reason become sticky in memory and lots of people use it not only for the purpose that it was meant for, but elsewhere as well. Okay, and catchphrases sometimes have a fairly short life, like, I don't know if you remember Dad's Army, Captain Mannering would say, "You stupid boy."
Well, I don't remember it, but I know of it.
Well, okay, right. Well, the two Ronnies, it's good night from me and it's good night from him.
Yeah, definitely, right? Mostly because my dad always quoted it.
Okay, so these are catchphrases, and catchphrases are quirky things which people have said which actually have grabbed the public imagination, and people repeat. Up your nose with a rubber hose was John Travolta in Welcome Back, Cotter, I think it was.
Didn't get that one.
No, you didn't? Well, all right, they're all... But you see, the interesting thing is they're very generational. I'm at least a generation older than you are, and so the things that I remember belong to a series of things which had already passed by the time you started sucking up language as a younger person. And, one that is, you know, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
That's I know that one.
Yeah, that's Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind. And
but I love the golden years of Hollywood.
Oh, yes. But again, if you think about the phrases which were current, or even proverbs, you know, like sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Now, these tend to persist across generations. Take care of the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves. Even though we're now decimal and the pennies and pounds have long since gone.
Doesn't have the same ring to it if you say it with cents and dollars.
No, it doesn't. Well, it never was.
But the sticks and stones one would survive, wouldn't it? Because it's still relevant
and it's still
people
wrong.
Still tease.
And it's still wrong because names certainly can hurt if they're uttered sufficient ill will. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Now, these are all proverbs.
Apparently you can, because Alison Alexander has given me some, and she just talks while I eat
Alison
on the show.
Alison is a genius, and she's an exception. Many hands make light work. Don't cross the bridge until you come to it. These are proverbs. You know, what I always say is, sticks and stones, you know, and it sounds as if you're uttering something which is incontrovertible, no one can challenge it, it has to be right. And yet when you look at it, you think,
If you take the time to actually look at it.
We should always reflect on the things we're saying, because sometimes we're just using words without meaning. So there. I've got lots and lots of various phrases, like, you know, is the Pope Catholic? It means that was so obvious you can't really... And that's only 1969 or so. It's fairly recent.
Does a bear in the woods?
Indeed, yes. It's all Greek to me.
Yeah.
But that's Shakespeare. And in Shakespeare's day, Greek was the difficult remote language. But nowadays we have it, you know, double Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
Dutch is actually very close to English anyway, but something that you don't understand. This is the English and the Dutch being rude about each other during the 16th, 17th century, when they were both very good maritime powers and vying for supremacy. And so, you know, Dutch uncle, Dutch auction, Dutch courage, all sorts of phrases in English having a go at the Dutch. Very unfair.
It is very unfair. Do you know what? I have never thought of that. Mind you, I don't think I use those phrases very much, but you're right.
It does you credit.
You need to think about the
words. And apparently in Dutch there are very few comparable ones about the English, which says something about the open-mindedness of the Dutch.
Open-mindedness, or the fact that they're confident and they just don't need to throw names around. They're very confident. Yeah.
But all Greek to me was Shakespeare. And, of course, Shakespeare is responsible for all sorts of things which are somewhere between catchphrases and now anchored in parts of the language. You know, Shakespeare had this phenomenal imagination which could pick up combinations of words which would stick. As well as some which, you know, he invented about, I think, 1,500 words which didn't take place in the language, but others which did.
And they survived?
He did. Oh, yes. We'll do Shakespeare's words another day.
I cannot wait
huge.
For that. Okay, it's 14 minutes past 10. Shall we have a chat to Ron in Brighton? Ron, you've got a saying, is this? What did you want to share?
Yeah, I'm a primary school teacher, and I say it to my kids, but I've never really thought about it until my wife said, what's that mean? Mind your own beeswax, Riley.
I like your delivery there too, Ron.
Yeah, it's got the right intonation, hasn't
it? Yeah.
I feel I'm back in this class, aged five or six. Okay, it's mind your own business. But mind your own business is actually quite confrontational. It means shut up and stop poking your nose into my things.
Mm.
And so this is one of those euphemisms. And euphemisms are very often things like, you know, he's pushing up daisies rather than he's died or he's carked it or something. They're about things which we are unhappy about talking about straight up. And mind your own business is quite strong. And so mind your beeswax is a, you know, it starts with B. It vaguely suggests the word that you're not saying, but it gets you off the hook and you're not actually, you can't be accused of being cruel and unfair.
Okay.
That's where it comes from.
Okay, yes, I have bees and I'm thinking, I don't care, time to take my wax, that's fine. But
okay.
Look after your own honey.
Yeah, look after your own honey.
look after your bees, they are threatened overseas at the moment.
Yes, even when I shut down the computer, I'll often say, oh, I'm going to shut up the computer. No, can't say shut up. I'll get very upset. Don't say
right.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Strong.
There are words which are known to be confrontational or bad or rude or challenging or sharp, and people tend to try and avoid those unless you're actually trying to get up someone's nose.
Yes.
And there's another phrase.
Get up. Not with a hose, though. Ron, what grade do you teach?
Grade two.
Mind your beeswax. You'd have to say that a lot to seven and eight-year-olds.
If I hadn't become a university teacher, I think I'd have liked to teach young kids. There's a time around about age five, six, seven where they're soaking up language and doing things with it. Yeah.
I love it.
Into you.
Yeah, that's where mine are at the moment. The questions I get.
Yeah.
And so more calls coming in. The number is 1300 222 612. Rolly Sussex is here, and in particular we're looking for your favourite sayings, proverbs, euphemisms,
but things which particularly, say, your parents' generation or grandparents' generation, like, you know, up in auntie's room behind the clock or whatever, which is one of these ways of avoiding. This is avoidance language. When the children ask you where did babies come from, you know, so it's up in auntie's room behind.
Or no, I have never heard
you
that
haven't?
One.
Well, there you go. It's a generational thing again. There you are, Emma. You're going to start sounding like someone in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, lovely, lovely. What about? Oh, so we've got more calls coming in. Gwen from Waverley Heights. Gwen, what did you want to talk to Rolly about?
Oh, I was just listening to Rolly talk about his father quoting the Bible to these people. Well, the same thing happened with my husband's friend, Jeff.
Mm.
He'd been in hospital, and he was home, and we went to visit him, and there was a knock on the door, and he went and answered it, and there was this group of people from one of the religions, and they started to quote to Jeff, and Jeff said, "Oh, come in, come in." And Jeff quoted the Bible back at these people, and eventually they were backing out and trying to get away, and he was following them, and he followed them right down to the front gate.
Oh, dear.
And in the meantime, his mother and my husband and myself, we were just roaring, laughing.
Well, the folks who visit you like this are, of course, in great good faith, but the interesting thing is how much of the Bible some of the older generations did know. And again, the sorts of things that you remember, the books weren't so freely available, there wasn't so much, the libraries were not nearly as expanded as they are now. And so people did learn things by heart, and they used to tell stories and tales and so on. Fairy tales, Grimm's fairy tales, whole chunks of those were learned by heart as well.
Wow.
But again, parts of the church service, which you went to, you know, if you went every Sunday, you learnt that by heart. And these became part of the way you talk with, you use language.
What about this one? I remember, and it still happens now, what did you get me for, what are you going to get me for my birthday, Mum, I'll say, or to my grandmother as a child? Oh, a silver new nothing with a tassel on the top.
Oh, I haven't heard that for.
I wonder if that's just them.
I think maybe
where does
them.
That come
I've heard a variant of that. I'm trying to remember what it was from my grandma. And she was born in Victoria in 1876 and lived to 105. And so her memory of language was phenomenal.
Wow. A silver new nothing with a tassel on the top. I use it now with my children. And then, of course, I get all the questions. Okay, Pat in Gatton. Pat, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
What's your saying for Rolly?
Good morning, Rolly.
Hello there.
My father used to say to my brother, when he was, I think, trying to pull my father's leg or tell a small lie, "Don't come the good giddy ox at me, my lad."
Oh, yes. That
haven't
one.
Haven't heard it for years.
No. And again, the curious thing is that I think the younger generation are not using these as much as used to happen a generation or so ago. Giddy ox, I know, and there are other giddy animals which I've heard, meaning don't try and take me for a don't assume that I'm a fool or that I'm gullible. I know what you're on about. Thanks for reminding me about that one. I'd forgotten it.
Yeah. Is that a bit like raw prawn?
No, raw prawn is off like a raw prawn in the sun.
Don't come the raw prawn?
Oh, don't come the raw prawn with me, yes. And again, raw prawn is one of the echo phrases. And it means I'm not as gullible as that. No, I know exactly what you're on about. But prawns get a rather bad press in Australia from that point of view.
But we love them.
Oh, we love them, yes, but off like a raw prawn. Off like a bucket of prawns in the sun.
Mm.
Have you smelt a bucket of prawns after they've been left out?
Not after that. Well, the prawn guts and skins and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. if you get in a swim in a fishing boat a couple of days when someone's left some prawns under the thwart, this is not a good experience. A bit like mullet guts.
That's happened
to
you.
And old squid. Oh, yes.
Mm. Robin in Rothwell. Hello, Robin.
Hi there.
What did you want to talk about, mate?
Look, I have a quotation from Shakespeare I use regularly, and I want to know who said it and which work of Shakespeare it came from.
Yes.
What it is, obviously, every time I open, empty a bottle of scotch, I hold it in my left hand, look down at it and say, "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well."
Yes. I'm not quite sure what Yorick is doing at the bottom of the whiskey bottle. It's Hamlet, and
he's holding the skull.
You know, that's why Yorick, I knew him well. You know.
When did this start, Robin?
This one is old. Association with a whiskey bottle. Robin will have to introspect and see if he can remember.
Yeah, Robin, when did this start for you?
It's obviously the dead. It's finished.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and a dead marine is another word for a bottle, of course, and that's a set phrase which is used by some generations. You're looking worried about me.
I'm all of the drinking references. No, a dead marine. No, I've just never heard that before.
Well, it's possibly because of the Marines. It might be American. I'll check that one up.
Okay.
The trouble is the origins of these things. There are thousands of them, and some of the origins are known. And some of them are literary, like Shakespeare, and some of them are simply, they popped up somewhere and people copied them and we don't know where they came from.
Yeah, then, and even the Shakespeare ones, Rolly, aren't they sometimes commonly used?
Yes.
But you don't realise that it comes from Shakespeare.
No, people say Shakespeare is full of clichés. Well, in fact, he created them. They may have been in use in his day and he made them famous.
Yeah. Right?
But after Shakespeare, everybody does it.
Yeah. Okay, Peter at the Gap. Peter, do you have a favourite saying?
No, it was... I just wanted to talk to Rolly about last week.
Mm.
He was talking about the way he addressed people, like, for instance, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
But you didn't mention lads and lasses.
Ah, right. Golden lads and lasses must, like chimney something, come to just. Yes. Lads and lasses, north of England or Scots, I think. Certainly lassie is Scottish. And no, thank you for that. That, again, is one which I think is now either regional or British. It's not known in Australia except as something which other people say.
But yes, you might say it as well, but you're sort of saying it aware that it's a bit odd.
Yes, I think if you do use it, you're consciously using something which is not standard usage in Australia.
Mm, another Peter. Peter on the Sunshine Coast. Hello.
Hi. Or kia ora.
Yes.
Rolly.
Thank you.
Tell me, is it patronising to use the term bring the boys back from the front?
Oh. Not that I'm aware. And this was one of the calls at the end of one of the world wars, when you know the soldiers had been doing it hard in the trenches for a long, long while. So right. Bring the boys back home. I don't think it is. If anyone does know of a pejorative sense of that, I'd be curious to know.
No, I just wondered. You know, you mentioned the term using girls, to young women.
Oh, right. Yes. No, boys in this case, I mean, is just an affectionate way of saying our lads. You know, our soldiers.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, thank you for
okay.
that.
Okay.
Kevin at Slacks Creek.
Yeah, I have a saying, which probably people might be interested in. What it was used to be, say, if a child asked, say their grand, an older person, their grandfather, their grandmother, how old are you?
Mm-hmm.
The standard response was, as old as my tongue and a little bit older than my teeth.
Oh, wow.
Very clever. And I suppose, too, you know, also, you know, rather than, you know, saying mind your own business, which they were probably thinking, but and rather sounding rude to a child.
Yes, yes.
You know, bearing, you could say, yeah, as old as my tongue, a little bit older than my teeth. And also, can I just say about the word boys in referring to servicemen?
Yes.
Well, I have seen that word sort of engraved on war memorials.
Oh, yes.
What, like the one on a memorial is, you know, dedicated to our boys. And
yes.
There's one at Ipswich, one at just, what they call it, 1 mile outside Ipswich.
They use
boys, another one.
Mm-hmm.
Boys. And also it's very common, because they say, you know, that thing, the boys are far away, they dream.
Indeed, yeah.
Thanks for the details, Kevin.
Of those monuments as well, because this is good evidence, you know, that these words were used respectfully.
Affectionately.
Also affectionately, I think, about the people who were risking their lives for in those days, king and country.
And some of them were boys.
Oh, yes.
Sneaky ones who thought it would be a great adventure in World War One.
Lied about their age and got in young, yeah.
And what about that saying, as old as my tongue and slightly older than my teeth or tooth?
Well, this appears to be very profound, but in effect it's very obvious when you think about it.
Yes, that's what I was going.
The tongue has been with you shortly after conception, and the teeth actually came out, or as dentists say, erupted. I like dentist talk. A little bit later when you start teething.
Erupted. 25 past 10 on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. Rolly Sussex is with you for a word in your ear. And Kerry on the Sunshine Coast, what did you want to talk with Rolly about?
I'm a 60s born baby, and my family, I think they use so many expressions.
Yes.
You look like the wreck of the Hesperus, and
yeah.
Your room looks like a Chinese joss house. But the one thing that I was ringing about was, I said to a friend the other day, an older friend, oh, not this black duck. And I said to him, who's black duck? And he didn't know either. So, wondering where that one came from.
It's new to me.
Not this little black duck?
No.
I've heard that before.
Not this little black duck, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the origin is, though. I will chase it up.
Excellent. Yeah. Homework for Rolly. You Thank love you. It, don't you, Rolly?
Oh, yes. These give me an excuse to go digging in the lovely old... I've got a room full of dictionaries at home and list, you know, dictionaries or books about the expressions of different languages.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Mm. How big's the room?
Where's my study? And there's shelves and shelves of these things.
Wow.
I read dictionaries in bed. It's great fun.
Rolly Sussex, he's with you. He talks language with you. He obviously lives and breathes it, doesn't he? Diane from Alderley, what did you want to say?
Rolly, I'd love to see how large these dictionaries are that are in bed with you, because I think they might cause you concussion.
Yeah, they wouldn't want to fall on your head.
Some of them are large, yes.
One thing is, you're talking about bring the boys back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think as an American army, they always talk about no man left behind.
Oh, yes.
And I was wondering, are they allowed to say that anymore?
I don't know. I do have a friend in the military who will tell me about this, and I'll find out.
Yeah, because I was thinking it was just such a standard saying.
It was, yes.
But the one I actually rang about was like phrases that you just take for granted that come through from your grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it the other day, and I just went, oh, my goodness, that's horrible. And it was, you know, get your cotton pick and mitts off my cake.
Ooh, yeah, indeed.
And I just went, oh, my goodness, I realised the origin of the cotton picking.
Oh.
Yep, you're dead right. It's American and 19th century, and the people who picked the cotton were usually black. It's a Dixie term, and cotton picker, cotton picking, keep your cotton picking hands off me. It was a derogatory way of referring to people, and it's, I think, now probably unusable in that sense. It does turn up in Bugs Bunny, I think. So I can remember just a cotton-picking minute or something, but that was in the 50s or 60s and of last century.
It's so familiar, though, isn't it?
Like, oh, yes.
You've heard people in your life using that.
But it's certainly offensive, and I think nowadays, because of its association with race, it's something which should be avoided.
And on this little black duck that Kerry on the Sunshine Coast was saying, Simon says that little black duck or black duck comes from a Daffy Duck cartoon.
Oh, really?
So it all comes back to Bugs Bunny.
Disney has a lot to answer for.
That's my quote of the day with Rolly Sussex. Disney has a lot to answer for. Okay, now Danielle in Mitchelton. Oh, so many calls. Danielle, what did you want to say?
Good morning. Look, my dad, whenever we used to ask him what's for dinner, he used to respond, duck under the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if this one is Australian or not, but it's certainly, again, I think it's a piece of avoidance language. And I know where to look to find out about this one. I'm coming up short on a number of these today, but this is fun. I will find out for you. Because, the context in which it was used was stop asking questions or something like that?
Or maybe he just didn't know what he was cooking at that point.
Right. Okay.
Was it a dad joke, Danielle?
Possibly.
You know, like, I'm hungry. Oh, nice to meet you, hungry. I'm Romania.
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Dad jokes, Rolly. Did you ever do them?
No. Not quite the same way anyway.
Magella in Charleville. Hello.
Hello. How are you today?
Very well.
Morning.
What word do you want to put in Rolly's ear?
Well, Rolly, I've been wanting to ask you this for many years, and I keep never getting on to you.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about our language and the letters of the alphabet,
yes.
We've got Y, but Y says W, but then when you look at all the words that it starts with, it actually sounds year, as in year, and the W sound is whale, but it's a W.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two letters need to be swapped around.
Oh, I see. The Y letter was certainly a Y sound, and the name is related to European names for the older letters there. And W actually was two U's written together, and that's why it's double U. In French it's W, which is two V's, because this letter was not around in Latin, and it had to be provided later for a sound in English, which wasn't in the Latin alphabet they'd borrowed. Well, that's a nice little bit of observation there, that the sounds are done a kind of swap around it, apparently.
Magella, yes. That's obviously been troubling you for a while.
Yeah.
It has, yes.
I think it's a bit of acceptance, isn't it, Rolly? Like, friends of mine who have learned English as a second language go, why is it like that? And even my children, like, why do we spell what with an A and was with an A? It's like, I don't know.
Well, about 5% of English words are not pronounced the way they're written, if you take it literally. Unfortunately, a lot of those, like what, are in fact very common ones. And so in order to be competent in English, one of your first big jobs is to overcome the problems of the odd spelling. Once you get there, you know, once you've climbed that particular mountain, the next 95% of the words are probably going to be predictable from their spelling.
What's your advice about overcoming your objection to it?
Just keep on going.
Except...
I'm sorry, it's hours and hours of application, exposure and learning and making mistakes and learning from the mistakes. It's a bit like Spanish. The first 600 verbs are irregular and after that it's plain sailing. And plain sailing, of course, is another old phrase.
Where does that one come from?
Oh, it's the days of windjammers and, you know, sailing boats. Plain sailing was you don't have to muck around with wind in the sails. You've got the wind where you want it, pushing you in the right direction. Just sit back and enjoy it.
The sun's really
over the
nice.
Yardarm. Mm. Unfortunately, with the yardarm, this is the Royal Navy would start drinking when the sun once the sun was over the yardarm.
Well, it's not over the yardarm yet.
It's close. It used to get over the yardarm about 11 a.m., and that's why they were sloshed by mid-afternoon and were no good for a fight.
The Queen has gin from 11 a.m.,
Really?
Did you know that?
No.
Queen Elizabeth II, it's official.
Mm-hmm.
She sips on gin.
Well.
You'd have to do something to get through it, wouldn't
that's
you?
That's a good excuse for.
You've got a couple of others from John in Mareeba that were fantastic. Mm. The ones particularly Australian, face like a.
Like, well, I can't remember whether he sent this one, but face like a drop pie, I like that. It's very Australian. And there, if you've ever seen a pie.
It's so descriptive,
yes.
Isn't it?
There are quite a few face-like-a ones, which are, again, very much us. Face-like-a-drop-pie. Face-like-a-south-end-of-a-northbound-camel, if you've ever viewed camels from that end. Or face-like-a-back-of-a-tram. Most places, with the exception of Melbourne, don't have trams anymore. And the back end of a Melbourne tram is a great deal more elegant than it used to be. And happy as a pig in mud. I said that the other day. Someone had sent me some new data about language, and I said I was happy as a pig in mud.
Happy as Larry.
Happy as Larry, yes. That was Larry Foley, I think it was, who was a boxer who died about 1916 and who was famous for having a very beautiful, positive attitude towards life. And what a way to leave your memory behind.
Wow.
You know, I think it's lovely.
That is excellent to know. Now, Brett has sent a text in, Rolly, to talk about duck under the table.
Yes.
And says that he was told bread and duck under the table came from World War II England and refers to not having much to eat, little to eat. And he says then there's the double entendre of ducking under the table when the German bombers interrupted your dinner. I'm not sure that's a double entendre, is it?
Maybe it is. Well, I mean, double entendre is certainly a good way of describing ambiguities. I'm not sure one is there.
Yes, right.
Yeah, but no, bread and duck under the table. This sounds in the days when duck was actually pretty ordinary rather than special, and bread and dripping was, you know, they didn't have butter for a long time.
And the consensus from your listeners and fans, Rolly, appears to be that Daffy Duck is to blame for not this little black
Except
duck.
Except that I think I've got Disney wrong. Is it Warner Brothers?
It's Warner Brothers. So Warner Brothers and Disney have a lot
to answer for.
So Al, Mark and Maggie, thanks very much for getting in touch on that one. And Rolly, what is your final word?
It actually is a word. It comes from a list called Wordsmith that comes around. And in 1931, there was a musical called Of Thee I Sing. And a vice presidential character in it was called Alexander Throttlebottom. That is one of the most beautifully descriptive words I've come across for a long while. Emma will come back to us in a few moments.
On your radio and online.
At home or on the road.
This is ABC Radio.